Many people sell in a panic. That is when the qualified investor really becomes wealthy. It is not the crash that is so bad, but the emotional panic that occurs at the times of such financial downturns. The problem with most new investors is that they have not yet been through a real bear market. So, how would they know what a market crash and bear market feels like, especially if it goes on for years? Rich Dad simply said, "It is not possible to predict the market, but it is important that we be prepared for whichever direction it decides to go." He also said, "Bull markets seem to go on forever, which causes people to become sloppy, foolish, and complacent. Bear markets also seem to go on forever, causing people to forget that bear markets are often the best times to become very, very rich. That is why you want to be a qualified investor." Why markets will crash faster in the information age. In his book, The Lexus and the Olive Tree, a book I recommend for anyone wanting to understand the era of global business we are in, Thomas L. Friedman often makes reference to the electronic herd. The electronic herd is a group of several thousand, very often young, people who control great sums of digital money. They are the individuals who work for large banks, mutual funds, hedge funds, insurance companies, and the like. With a click of their mouse, they have the power to move literally trillions of dollars from one country to another country in a split second. That power gives the electronic herd more power than politicians. I was in Southeast Asia in 1997 when the electronic herd moved their money out of countries like Thailand, Indonesia, Malaysia, and Korea, virtually sinking those countries' economies overnight. It was not a pretty sight, nor was it pleasant to be physically present in those countries at that time. For those of you who invest globally, you may recall how most of the world, even Wall Street, was singing praises to the new Asian tiger economies. Everyone wanted to invest in those countries. Then suddenly, literally overnight, their world changed. There were murders, suicides, riots, looting, and a general feeling of financial sickness everywhere when the electronic herd did not like what it saw in those countries and moved their money out in a matter of seconds. Thomas Friedman wrote in his book, "Think of the electronic herd as being like a herd of wildebeests grazing over a wide area of Africa. When a wildebeest on the edge of the herd sees something move from the tall, thick brush next to where it's feeding, that wildebeest doesn't say to the wildebeest next to it, 'Gosh, I wonder if that's a lion moving around there in the brush.' No way. That wildebeest just starts a stampede, and those wildebeests don't stampede for a mere 100 yards. They stampede to the next country and crush everything in their path. That is what happened to the Asian tigers in 1997. When the electronic herd did not like what they saw going on in the area, they moved out literally overnight. It went from high optimism to riots and murder in a matter of days. It's my prediction that market crashes will come faster and more severely in the information age. How does one protect oneself from these crashes? The way some of these countries are protecting themselves from the power of the electronic herd is by cleaning up and tightening up their national financial statements and increasing their financial requirements and standards. Thomas Friedman writes in his book that Deputy Treasury Secretary Larry Summers once said, "If you were writing a history of the American capital markets, I would suggest that the single most important innovation shaping that capital market was the idea of generally accepted accounting principles. We need that internationally. It is a minor but not insignificant triumph of the IMF that in Korea, somebody who teaches a night school class in accounting told me that he normally has 22 students in his winter term, but now he has 385. We need that at the corporate level in Korea. We need that at the national level. Rich Dad said a similar thing years ago, but he was not referring to an entire country as Larry Summers was in this quote. Rich Dad was referring to any individual who wants to do well financially. Rich Dad said, "The difference between a rich person and a poor person is much more than how much money they make. The difference is found in their financial literacy and the standards of importance they put on that literacy. Simply put, poor people have very low financial literacy standards, regardless of how much money they make." He also said, "People with low financial literacy standards are often unable to take their ideas and create assets out of them. Instead of creating assets, many people create liabilities with their ideas just because of low financial literacy standards." Getting out is more important than getting in. Rich Dad often said, "The reason most average investors lose money is that it is often easy to invest into an asset, but it is often difficult to get out. If you want to be a savvy investor, you need to know how to exit an investment as well as how to get into the investment. Today, when I invest, one of the most important strategies I must consider is my exit strategy. To help me understand its importance, Rich Dad put the importance of an exit strategy in these terms. He said, "Buying an investment is often like getting married. In the beginning, things are exciting and fun. But if things do not go well, then the divorce can be much more painful than all that initial excitement and fun. That is why you must really think about an investment almost like a marriage. Getting in is often a lot easier than getting out." Both my dads were very happily married men, so when Rich Dad talked about divorce, he was not encouraging people to get divorced. He was just advising me to think about the long term. He said, "The odds are that 50% of all marriages will end in divorce, and the reality is that nearly 100% of all marriages think they will beat those odds. And that may be why so many new investors are buying IPOs, buying shares from the more seasoned investors." Rich Dad's best words on this subject were, "Always remember that when you are excitedly buying an asset, there is often someone who knows more about the asset who is excitedly selling it to you." When people learn to invest by playing the cash flow games, one of the technical skills they learn is when to buy and when to sell. Rich Dad said, "When you buy an investment, you should also have an idea of when to sell it, especially investments offered to accredited and higher investors. In the more sophisticated types of investments, your exit is often more important than the entry strategy. When getting into such investments, you should know what will happen if the investment goes well and what will happen if the investment goes badly." Financial skills of a qualified investor. For people who want to learn the basic financial skills, we developed the cash flow games. We recommend playing it at least 6 to 12 times. By playing Cash Flow 101 repeatedly, you begin to understand the basics of fundamental investment analysis. After playing 101 and gaining an understanding of the financial skills it teaches, you may want to move on to playing Cash Flow 202, where you begin to learn the complex skills and vocabulary of technical trading. You learn to use trading techniques such as short selling, which is selling shares you do not own in anticipation of the price coming down. You also learn to use call options, put options, and straddles. All of these are very sophisticated trading techniques which all qualified investors need to know. The best thing about these games is that you learn by playing and using play money. That same education in the real world could be very expensive. Why games are better teachers. In 1950, a nun who was a history and geography teacher in Calcutta was called on to help the poor and to live among them. Instead of just talking about caring for the poor, she chose to say very little and help the poor with her actions, not just her words. It was because of her actions that when she did speak, people listened. She had this to say about the difference between words and actions. There should be less talk. A preaching point is not a meeting point. There should be more action on your part. I chose to use games as the means of teaching the investment skills my rich dad taught me because games require more action than a lecture. As Mother Teresa said, a preaching point is not a meeting point. Our games are meeting points. Games provide a social interaction for learning and helping someone else to learn. When it comes to investing, there are too many people trying to teach investing by preaching. We all know that there are certain things that are not best learned by simply reading and listening. Some things require action to be learned, and games provide this elementary action step to learning. There is an old aphorism that goes, "I hear and I forget. I see and I remember. I do and I understand." My purpose in going beyond just writing books about money and investing and creating games as learning tools is to create more understanding. The more understanding people have, the more they can see the other side of the coin. Instead of seeing fear and doubt, the players begin to see opportunities they never saw before because their understanding increases each time they play the game. There are many stories of people who have played our games and have had their lives suddenly changed. They have gained a new understanding about money and investing, an understanding that pushed out some old thoughts and gave them new possibilities for their lives. Rich Dad taught me to be a business owner and investor by playing the game of Monopoly. He was able to teach his son and me so much more after the game was over when we visited his businesses and real estate. I wanted to create educational games that taught the same fundamental and technical investing skills that Rich Dad taught me, far beyond what is taught in Monopoly. As Rich Dad said, the ability to manage cash flow and to read financial statements is fundamental to success on the B and I side of the cash flow quadrant. Investor controls possessed by the qualified investor. The qualified investor has control over 1. Yourself, 2. Income expense ratios and asset liability ratios, 3. When you buy and when you sell. The E's possessed by the qualified investor: 1. Education, 2. Experience, none, 3. Excess cash, maybe. The qualified investors, both fundamental and technical, are analyzing a company from the outside. They are deciding whether to become buying shareholders. Many very successful investors are happy operating as qualified investors. With the proper education and financial advice, many qualified investors can become millionaires. They are investing in businesses developed and run by others. Because they have studied and obtained a financial education, they are able to analyze the company from its financial statements. What does PE mean? The qualified investor understands the price earnings, PE, ratio of a stock, which is also referred to as the market multiplier. The PE ratio is calculated by dividing the current market price of a stock by the previous year's earnings per share. Generally, a low PE would mean that a stock is selling at a relatively low price compared to its earnings. A high PE would indicate that a stock's price is high and may not be much of a bargain. PE ratio equals market price per share divided by net income per share. The PE ratio of one successful company may be very different from that of another successful company if the two companies are in different industries. For example, high-tech companies with big growth and high earnings generally sell at much higher PEs than low-tech or mature companies where growth has stabilized. Some stocks can sell at very high prices even when the companies have no earnings. The high prices reflect the market's expectation for high earnings in the future. Future PE is the key. A qualified investor recognizes that the current PE is not as important as the future PE. The investor wants to invest in a company that has a strong financial future. In order for the PE ratio to be helpful to the investor, much more information about the company may be needed. Generally, the investor will compare a company's ratios for the current year with that of previous years to measure the growth of the company. The investor will also compare the company's ratios with those of other companies in the same industry. Not all day traders are qualified investors. Many people participate in day trading, which has become popular due to the convenience and availability of online trading. The day trader is hoping to earn profits through buying and selling securities within a single day. The day trader is very familiar with PE ratios. What distinguishes a successful day trader from an unsuccessful day trader is often his or her ability to see behind the PE ratio. For the most part, successful day traders have taken the time to learn the basics of technical or fundamental trading. Day traders without proper financial education and financial analysis skills are operating more like gamblers than traders. Only the most educated and successful day traders would be considered qualified investors. In fact, it has been said that the majority of new day traders lose some or all of their capital and quit trading within 2 years. Day trading is an extremely competitive S-quadrant activity in which the most knowledgeable and best prepared use everyone else's money. Learning how to keep a cool head and invest wisely during a crash is a very important qualified investor skill. Besides, it is during a crash that many people become very rich. Chapter 24, The Sophisticated Investor. The sophisticated investor knows as much as the qualified investor, but has also studied the advantages available through the legal system. Rich Dad defined the sophisticated investor as an investor who knows what the qualified investor knows and who is familiar with the following specialties of law. 1. Tax law. 2. Corporate law. 3. Securities law. While not a lawyer, sophisticated investors may base as much of their investment strategy on the law as on the investment product and potential returns. The sophisticated investor often gains higher returns with very low risk by using the different disciplines of law. Knowing the ETC. By knowing the basics of the law, the sophisticated investor is able to use the advantages of ETC, which stands for Entity, Timing, Character. Rich Dad would describe the ETC as follows. The E stands for control over the entity, which means the choice of business structure. If you are an employee, this is not usually in your control. A person from the S quadrant usually can choose from the following entities: a sole proprietorship, a partnership, which is the worst structure because you are entitled to your share of income but are responsible for all the risk, an S corporation, an LLC, limited liability company, an LLP, limited liability partnership, or a C corporation. Today, in the United States, if you are an attorney, doctor, architect, dentist, and so on, and choose the C corporation as your entity, your minimum tax rate is 35% versus 15% for someone like me because my business is a non-licensed professional services business. That additional 20% tax rate differential adds up to a lot of money, especially when measured over years. It means a non-professional would have a 20% financial head start over a professional within a C corporation at the start of each year. Rich Dad would say to me, "But just think about people in the E quadrant who cannot elect their choice of entity. For them, regardless of how hard they work and how much they make, the government always gets paid first through income tax withholding. And the harder you work to make more money, the more the government takes. That's because people in the E quadrant have virtually no control over entity, expenses, and taxes. Again, people in the E quadrant cannot pay themselves first because of the current Tax Payment Act of 1943, which started the withholding of income taxes from employees. After the passage of that act, the government always got paid first. In America, partnerships, S-corporations, LLPs, and LLCs are often called pass-through entities because the income passes through the entity's returns and shows up on the owner's return. Consult a tax advisor for applicability of which entity is appropriate for your situation. C-corporations. And you always try to operate via a C-corporate entity, don't you? I would ask Rich Dad. In most cases, he replied. Remember that the plan precedes the product or, in this case, the corporate entity. The point is that those who operate from the B quadrant tend to have more choices and hence more control over the best entity to make their plan work. Again, those fine points should be discussed with both your tax attorney and your tax accountant. But why a C corporation? I asked. What is the difference that is so important to you? This is the one big difference, he said, having waited a long time to explain it. A sole proprietorship, a partnership, and an S corporation are all part of you. They are, in simple terms, an extension of you. And what is a C corporation? I asked. A C corporation is another you. It is not just an extension of you. A C corporation has the ability to be a clone of you. If you are serious about doing business, then you do not want to do business as a private citizen. That is too risky, especially in this day and age of lawsuits. When you do business, you want a clone of you actually doing the business. You do not want to do business or own anything as a private citizen, Rich Dad guided me. If you want to be a rich private citizen, you need to be as poor and penniless as possible on paper. Rich Dad also said, the poor and the middle class, on the other hand, want to own everything in their name. Pride of ownership, they call it. I call anything with your name on it a target for predators and lawyers. The main point Rich Dad was trying to make was, the rich do not want to own anything, but want to control everything. And they control via corporations and limited partnerships. That is why control of the E in ETC is so important to the rich. I have seen a devastating example of how the choice of entity could have helped prevent the financial destruction of a family. A very successful local hardware store was owned as a family partnership. The family had been in town forever, knew everyone, had become wealthy, and was quite involved in civic and charitable organizations. You could not have asked for a more wonderful, caring, and giving couple. One night, their teenage daughter was drinking and driving, had an accident, and killed a passenger in the other car. Their lives were dramatically altered. Their 17-year-old daughter was sent to an adult prison for 7 years, and the family lost everything they owned, including the business. In sharing this example, I am not trying to make any moral or parenting statements. I'm simply pointing out that proper financial planning for both the family and the business, through the use of insurance, trusts, limited partnerships, or corporations, might have prevented this family from losing its livelihood. What about double taxation? I am often asked, why do you recommend C corporations instead of S corporations or LLCs? Why do you want to be subject to double taxation? Double taxation occurs because a corporation is taxed on its income and then, when it declares a dividend to its shareholders, they are taxed on the dividend. The same thing can occur when an improperly structured sale of a corporation occurs and a liquidity dividend is declared. The dividend is not deductible to the corporation, but is taxable to the shareholder. Therefore, that income is taxed at both the corporate and individual level. Business owners often increase their own salaries to reduce or wipe out corporate profits and thereby eliminate the possibility of having those profits taxed twice. Alternatively, as the corporation continues to grow, the retained profits are used to expand the business and help it grow. In the United States, a C corporation must justify this accumulation of earnings or it will become subject to the accumulated earnings tax. There is no double taxation unless dividends are declared. I personally like C corporations because I believe they provide the maximum flexibility. I always look at the big picture. When I start a business, I expect it to become a big business. Most big businesses today are C corporations, or the equivalent in other countries. I grow businesses because I want to sell them or take them public, not receive dividends. Sometimes I choose a different entity for a business. For example, I formed an LLC with partners so that I could buy a building. You should consult with your financial and tax advisors to determine the appropriate structure for your situation. Timing. Rich Dad would describe the T as timing. Timing is important because ultimately we all need to pay taxes. Paying taxes is an expense of living in a civilized society. The rich want to control how much they pay in taxes as well as when they have to pay them. Understanding the law helps in controlling the timing of paying taxes. For instance, Section 1031 of the U.S. Tax Code allows you to roll over your gain in investment real estate if you buy another property at a greater price. This allows you to defer paying taxes until the second property is sold, or you may choose to roll it over repeatedly, perhaps forever. Another important timing issue is provided by the C corporation status. C corporations can elect a different year-end than December 31st for tax and accounting purposes, such as June 30th, for instance. December 31st is required for most individuals, partnerships, S-corporations, and LLCs. A different year-end date allows for a certain amount of strategic tax planning as to the timing of distributions between corporations and two individuals. It is important to understand that all decisions related to entity selection, as well as income timing issues, should have legitimate business purposes and be thoroughly discussed with your legal and tax advisors. Although I use these tax planning opportunities personally, I do so with the careful guidance and planning of legal and tax advisors. It is imperative that you carefully review your individual financial and tax situation with your legal and tax advisors in order to choose the right entity for your business. Character of income. As far as the third component of the ETC, Rich Dad said, investors control. Everyone else gambles. The rich are rich because they have more control over their money than the poor and middle class. The moment you understand that the game of money is a game of control, you can focus on what is important in life, which is not making more money, but gaining more financial control. Reaching for his yellow pad, Rich Dad wrote, 1. Ordinary earned income, 2. Passive income, 3. Portfolio income. These are the three different kinds of income. Rich Dad stressed that I should know the difference between these three different types of income. The C of the ETC stands for the characteristics of the income. Is there a lot of difference? I asked. Very much so, he replied, especially when combined with the E entity and T timing of the ETC. Controlling the characteristics of your income is the most important financial control of all. but you may first want to control the E and the T. It took me a while to fully appreciate and understand why controlling the characteristics of these three different types of income is so important. It's important because the characteristics of the income are what separate the rich from the middle class, Rich Dad said. The poor and middle class focus on ordinary earned income, also called wages or paycheck income. The rich focus on passive income and portfolio income. That is the fundamental difference between the rich and the middle class, which explains why control of the C, characteristics, is a fundamental control, especially if you plan on being rich. In America and other advanced economies, even the first dollar of earned income is taxed at higher rates than passive and portfolio income. The higher rates are necessary to provide various forms of social insurance, Rich Dad explained. Social insurance stands for payments the government makes to various people. In the United States, this would include Social Security, Medicare, and unemployment insurance, just to name a few. Income taxes are then calculated on top of social insurance taxes. Passive and portfolio income are not subject to social insurance taxes. So every day that I get up and focus on working hard to earn money, I am focusing on ordinary earned income, which means I pay more in taxes, I said. That is why you have been encouraging me to change my focus on what kind of income I want to earn. I realized Rich Dad was back to lesson number one of Rich Dad, Poor Dad. The rich don't work hard for money. They have their money work hard for them. It suddenly all made sense. I needed to learn how to convert ordinary earned income into passive and portfolio income so my money could start working for me. The investor controls of the sophisticated investor. 1. Control over yourself. 2. Control over income expense ratios and asset liability ratios. 3. Control over taxes. 4. Control over when you buy and when you sell. 5. Control over brokerage transactions. 6. Control over the ETC, entity, timing, characteristics. The three E's possessed by the sophisticated investor. 1. Education. 2. Experience. 3. Excess cash. The SEC test of a sophisticated investor is a non-accredited investor who either alone or with his purchasing representative has enough knowledge and experience in financial and business matters to be able to evaluate the merits and risks of the prospective investment. The SEC presumes that accredited investors, as defined earlier as the well-to-do who can afford to hire advisors, are capable of watching out for their own interests. In contrast, we believe many accredited and qualified investors are not sophisticated. Many wealthy individuals have not learned the basics of investing and the law. Many of them rely on investment advisors whom they hope are sophisticated investors to do the investing for them. Sophisticated investors understand the impact and advantages of the law and have structured their investment portfolio to take maximum advantage of entity selection, timing, and characteristics of income. In doing so, sophisticated investors have sought the advice of their legal and tax counsel. Many sophisticated investors are often content investing in other entities as outside investors. They may not possess control over the management of their investments, which distinguishes them from the inside investor. They may invest in management teams without possessing a controlling interest in the company. Alternatively, they may invest as partners in real estate syndications or as shareholders in large corporations. They study and invest prudently, but lack control over the management of the underlying asset and therefore have access only to public information of the company's operations. This lack of management control is the defining difference between a sophisticated investor and an inside investor. However, sophisticated investors still use the advantages provided by the ETC analysis for their own financial portfolio. In Phase 4, we will discuss how the sophisticated investor applies these principles to obtain the maximum advantage provided by the law. Good versus bad. In addition to the three characteristics of income, three other general principles distinguish a sophisticated investor from an average investor. A sophisticated investor knows the difference between good debt and bad debt, good expenses and bad expenses, good losses and bad losses. As a general rule, good debt, good expenses, and good losses all generate additional cash flow for you. For instance, debt taken to acquire a rental property, which has a positive cash flow each month, would be good debt. Likewise, paying for legal and tax advice are good expenses if they save you thousands of dollars in reduced taxes from tax planning. An example of a good loss is the loss generated by depreciation from real estate. This good loss is also called a phantom loss because it is a paper loss and does not require an actual outlay of cash. The end result is a savings in the amount of tax paid on the income offset by the loss. Knowing the difference between good and bad debt, expenses, and losses is what distinguishes the sophisticated investor from the average investor. When average investors hear the words debt, expense, and loss, they usually react negatively. Generally, their experiences with debt, expenses, and losses result in additional cash flowing out of their pockets instead of into their pockets. Sophisticated investors enlist the advice of accountants, tax strategists, and financial advisors to structure the most beneficial financial organization for their investments. They look for and invest in those deals that include the ETC features that support their personal financial plan, the map they are following to become rich. How can you identify a sophisticated investor? I remember a story my rich dad once told me about risk. While part of it has been covered in other parts of the book, it is worth repeating here. The average investor views risk from a completely different point of view than the sophisticated investor. And it is this view of risk that truly differentiates the sophisticated investor. One day I went to my rich dad and said, "My dad thinks that what you do is far too risky. He thinks that one financial statement is secure, but you think that controlling only one financial statement is risky. It seems like a contradiction in points of view." Rich Dad just chuckled. "It is," said Rich Dad, continuing to chuckle. "Almost exactly opposite and contradictory." Rich Dad paused for a moment to gather his thoughts. "If you want to become really rich," he said, "then one of the things you will have to change is your point of view on what you think is risky and what is secure. What the poor and middle class think is secure, I think, is risky." I thought about that statement for a brief moment, letting the idea sink in that what my dad thought was secure, my rich dad thought was risky. "I don't fully understand," I finally replied. "Can you give me an example?" "Sure," said Rich Dad. "Just listen to our words. Your dad always says, 'Get a safe, secure job.' Is that correct?" I nodded my head. "Yes, he thinks that is a secure way to run your life." "But is it really secure?" asked Rich Dad. "I guess he thinks it is," I replied. "But you see it differently?" Rich Dad nodded his head and then asked, "What often happens when a public company announces a large layoff of employees?" "I don't know," I replied. "You mean what happens when a company fires a lot of employees?" "Yes," said Rich Dad. What often happens to the price of their stock? I don't know, I replied. Does the share price go down? Rich Dad shook his head. Quietly, he said, no. Unfortunately, when a publicly listed company announces a large layoff of employees, the share price of that company often goes up. I thought about that statement for a moment and then said, and that is why you have often said there is a big difference between people on the left side of the cash flow quadrant and people on the right. Rich Dad nodded his head. A big difference. What is secure for one side is risky to the other. And that is why so few people become really rich? I asked. Again, Rich Dad nodded his head and repeated, what seems secure to one side seems risky to the other side. If you want to be rich and keep your wealth for generations, you must be able to see both sides of risk and security. The average investor only sees one side. What seems secure is really risky. As an adult, I now see what my rich dad saw. Today, what I think is secure, most people think is risky. The following are some of the differences. Average investor, only one financial statement. Sophisticated investor, multiple financial statements. Average investor, wants everything in their name. Sophisticated investor, wants nothing in their name, uses corporate entities. Often personal residence and automobile are not in their names. Average investor, does not think of insurance as an investment, uses words such as diversify. Sophisticated investor, uses insurance as an investment product to hedge against exposed risk, uses words such as covered, exposure, and hedge. Average investor, holds only paper assets, which include cash and savings. Sophisticated investor, has both paper assets and hard assets, such as real estate and precious metals. Precious metals are a hedge against government mismanagement of the money supply. Average investor, focuses on job security. Sophisticated investor, focuses on financial freedom. Average investor, focuses on professional education, avoids making mistakes. Sophisticated investor, focuses on financial education, understands that mistakes are part of learning. Average investor, does not seek financial information or wants it for free if sought. Sophisticated investor, willing to pay for financial information. Average investor, thinks in terms of good or bad, black or white, right or wrong. Sophisticated investor, thinks in financial gray. Average investor, looks at past indicators such as PEs and capitalization rates. Sophisticated investor, looks for future indicators such as trends, pro formas, and changes in management and products. Average investor, calls brokers first and asks for investment advice, or invests alone, asking no one for advice. Sophisticated investor, calls broker last after consulting with plan and team of financial and legal advisors. Brokers are often part of the team. Average investor, seeks external security, such as job, company, government. Sophisticated investor, values personal self-confidence and independence. In conclusion, what looks secure to some investors seems risky to others. Chapter 25, The Inside Investor. The inside investor is someone who is on the inside of the investment and has some degree of management control. Although an important distinction of the inside investor is the aspect of control over management, the most important distinction, Rich Dad pointed out, was that you don't need to have a lot of income or net worth to be considered an inside investor. An officer, director, or owner of 10% or more of the outstanding shares of the corporation is an inside investor. Most investment books are written for people who are on the outside of the world of investing. This book is written for people who want to invest from the inside. Rich Dad always wanted his son and me to be investors on the inside rather than the outside. It is one very important way to reduce risk and increase returns. Someone with the financial education, but not the financial resources, of an accredited investor can still become an inside investor. This is where many people enter the world of investing today. By building their own companies, inside investors are building assets that they can run, sell, or take public. In his book, What Works on Wall Street, James P. O'Shaughnessy analyzes the returns by market capitalization of various types of investments. He shows that the small stocks far outperform the other categories. Almost all of the high returns are found in the small micro-cap stocks with market capitalizations below $25 million. The downside is that these stocks are hard to find for the average investor. As O'Shaughnessy states, they are tantalizingly out of reach of nearly everyone. There is very little trading volume in these stocks, so the ask price and bid price are usually far apart. This is an example of how 10% of the investors gain control of 90% of the shares. If you can't find these stocks to invest in, then consider the next best thing. Build your own small-cap stock company and enjoy the superior returns as an inside investor. How I did it. I found my financial freedom as an inside investor. Remember that I started small, buying real estate as a sophisticated investor. I learned how to use limited partnerships and corporations to maximize the tax savings and asset protection. I then started several companies to gain additional experience. With the financial education I learned from my rich dad, I built businesses as an inside investor. I did not become an accredited investor until I found success as a sophisticated investor. I have never considered myself a qualified investor. I do not know how to pick stocks and do not choose to buy stocks as an outsider. Why would I? Being an insider is much lower risk as well as much more profitable. If I can learn to become an inside investor through building a company, then so can you. Remember that the more controls you possess over your investment, the less risky it is. The investor controls possessed by the inside investor. 1. Control over yourself. 2. Control over income expense ratios and asset liability ratios. 3. Control over the management of the investment. 4. Control over taxes. 5. Control over when you buy and when you sell. 6. Control over brokerage transactions. 7. Control over the ETC, entity, timing, characteristics. 8. Control over the terms and conditions of the agreements. 9. Control over access to information. The three E's possessed by the inside investor. 1. Education. 2. Experience. 3. Excess cash. The SEC defines an insider as anyone who has information about a company that has not yet been made publicly available. The Securities Exchange Act of 1934 made it illegal for anyone who had non-public information on a company to profit from that information. This includes the insider, as well as anyone to whom he or she gives a tip who subsequently profits from the information. I use the word insider to define investors who have management control over the operations of the business. The inside investor has control over the direction of the company. An outside investor does not. I strongly oppose illegal insider trading. It is too easy to make money legally. Creating control. The money you invest and risk as the owner of a private business is your own. If you have outside investors, you have a fiduciary responsibility to manage their investment well, but you are able to control the management of the investment as well as access to insider information. Buying control. In addition to building a business on your own, you may become an inside investor through buying a controlling interest in an existing company. Buying a majority of the stock in a company allows you to acquire the controlling interest. Remember that as you increase the number of investor controls you possess, you continue to reduce your risk in the investment. That is, of course, if you possess the skill to manage the investment properly. If you already own a business and wish to expand, you may acquire another business through merger or acquisition. The important issues in mergers and acquisitions are far too numerous to explore here. However, it is very important to seek competent legal, tax, and accounting advice before any purchase, merger, or acquisition to make sure such transactions are done properly. To move from being an inside investor to an ultimate investor, you must decide to sell a portion or all of your business. The following questions may help you in your decision process. 1. Are you still excited about the business? 2. Do you want to start another business? 3. Do you want to retire? 4. Is the business profitable? 5. Is the business growing too rapidly for you to handle it? 6. Does your company have large capital funding needs that can best be met through selling stock or selling to another business? 7. Does your company have the money and time for a public offering? 8. Can your focus be diverted from the daily operations of the company to negotiate a sale or public offering without hurting the operations of the company? 9. Is the industry that your business is in expanding or contracting? 10. What impact will your competitors have on a sale or public offering? 11. If your business is strong, can you pass it on to your children or other family members? 12. Are there well-trained and managerially strong family members, children, to pass it on to? 13. Does the business need managerial skills that you lack? Many inside investors are extremely happy running their businesses and investment portfolios. They have no desire to sell a portion of their business through a public or private offering, nor do they want to sell the business outright. This is the type of investor that my best friend Mike has become. He is very content running the financial empire that he and his father built. Chapter 26, The Ultimate Investor. The ultimate investor is a person such as Bill Gates or Warren Buffett. These investors build giant companies that other investors want to invest in. The ultimate investor is a person who creates an asset that becomes so valuable that the asset they created is worth literally billions of dollars to millions of people. Both Gates and Buffett became rich, not because of their high salaries or great products, but because they built great companies and took the companies public. While it is not likely that many of us will ever build a Microsoft or Berkshire Hathaway, we all have the possibility of building a smaller business and becoming wealthy by selling it privately or selling it publicly. Rich Dad used to say, "Some people build houses to sell, others build cars, but the ultimate is to build a business that millions of people want to own a share of." Investor controls possessed by the ultimate investor. 1. Control over yourself. 2. Control over income expense ratios and asset liability ratios. 3. Control over the management of the investment. 4. Control over taxes. 5. Control over when you buy and when you sell. 6. Control over brokerage transactions. 7. Control over the ETC, entity, timing, characteristics. 8. Control over the terms and conditions of the agreements. 9. Control over access to information. 10. Control over giving it back, philanthropy, redistribution of wealth. The three E's possessed by the ultimate investor. 1. Education. 2. Experience. 3. Excess cash. Advantages and disadvantages of IPOs. There are advantages and disadvantages of going public, which we will discuss in greater detail later. However, here are a few of the advantages and disadvantages of an initial public offering, IPO. Advantages. 1. To allow business owners to cash in some of their equity in the business. For example, Gates' original partner, Paul Allen, sold some of his Microsoft shares in order to buy cable TV companies. 2. To raise expansion capital. 3. To pay off company debt. 4. To raise the company's net worth. 5. To allow the company to offer stock options as benefits to its employees. Disadvantages. 1. Your operations become public. You are forced to disclose information to the public that had previously been private. 2. The IPO is very expensive. 3. Your focus is diverted from running the operations of the business to facilitating and meeting the requirements of being a public company. 4. Compliance with the IPO and ongoing quarterly and annual reporting requirements are extensive. 5. You risk losing control of your company. 6. If your stock does not perform well in the public market, you risk being sued by your shareholders. For many investors, the potential financial reward of taking their company public greatly overshadows any potential disadvantage of an IPO. Starting on my path. The rest of this audiobook is about Rich Dad guiding me as an inside investor and sophisticated investor on my path to becoming the ultimate investor. He no longer had to guide his son Mike. Mike was content being an inside investor. You will gain some insights into what Rich Dad thought was important, what I needed to learn, and some of the mistakes I made along the way. It is my hope that you can learn from my successes as well as from my mistakes on your own path to becoming the ultimate investor. Chapter 27. How to Get Rich Slowly. Rich Dad would regularly review the various levels of investors with me. He wanted me to understand the various ways investors made their fortunes. My Rich Dad had become wealthy by first investing as an inside investor. He had started small and learned the tax advantages available to him. He quickly gained confidence and became a truly sophisticated investor at an early age. He had built an incredible financial empire. My real dad, on the other hand, had worked hard all his life as a government employee and had little to show for it. As I got older, the gap between my rich dad and my poor dad was increasingly evident. I finally asked my rich dad why he was becoming wealthier while my real dad was working harder and harder. In the introduction of this audiobook, I related the story of walking along the beach with my rich dad, looking at the large piece of oceanfront property he had just purchased. During that walk on the beach, I realized that my rich dad had just purchased an investment that only a rich person could acquire. The problem was that my rich dad was not really a rich man yet. That is why I asked him how he could afford such an expensive investment when I knew my real dad, a man who made more money than my rich dad, could not. It was during this walk on the beach that my rich dad shared the basis of his investment plan. He said, "I can't afford to buy this land either, but my business can." As I stated in the introduction, This was when my curiosity about the power of investing began and when I became a student of the profession. During that walk on the beach at the age of 12, I was beginning to learn the secrets of how many of the very richest people in the world invest and why they are the 10% who control 90% of the money. Again, I refer to Ray Kroc, founder of McDonald's, who said virtually the same thing to my friend's MBA class. Ray Kroc said to the class, "My business is not hamburgers. My business is real estate." That is why McDonald's owns the most valuable real estate in the world. Ray Kroc and Rich Dad understood that the purpose of a business is to buy assets. Rich Dad's investment plan. When I was a young boy still in elementary school, Rich Dad was already placing ideas in my head about the differences between being rich, poor, and middle class. During one of our Saturday lessons, he said, "If you want job security, follow your dad's advice. If you want to be rich, you need to follow my advice." The chances of your dad having both job security and becoming rich are slim. The laws are not written in his favor. One of Rich Dad's six lessons described in Rich Dad, Poor Dad was a lesson about the power of corporations. In Cash Flow Quadrant, I wrote about how the different quadrants were governed by different tax laws. Rich Dad used these lessons to show me the difference between his investment plan and my real dad's investment plan. These differences greatly affected my life's path after my formal education was complete and my military duty was over. "My business buys assets with pre-tax dollars," said Rich Dad. "Your dad tries to buy assets with after-tax dollars." As a young boy, I really did not fully comprehend what Rich Dad was trying to teach me, yet I recognized the difference. Because I was confused, I spent much time quizzing him on what it meant. "Why," I asked Rich Dad, "why do you pay your taxes last and why does my dad pay his taxes first?" "Because your dad is an employee and I am a business owner," said Rich Dad. "Always remember that we may live in a free country, but everybody does not live by the same laws. If you want to be rich, you had best follow the same laws the rich use." "How much in taxes does my dad pay?" I asked. "Well, your dad is a highly paid government employee, so I estimate that he pays at least 50% to 60% of his total income in taxes in one form or another," said Rich Dad. "And how much do you pay in taxes?" I asked. "Well, that is not really the correct question," said Rich Dad. "The real question is, how much is my taxable income?" I became confused and asked, "What is the difference?" "Well," said Rich Dad, "I pay taxes on net income, and your dad's taxes are withheld from his total income. That is one of the biggest differences between your dad and me. I get ahead faster because I get to buy my assets with gross income and pay taxes on net income. Your dad pays taxes on gross income and then tries to buy assets with his net income. That is why it is very, very hard for him to achieve any kind of wealth. He gives a lot of his money to the government first, money that he could be using to buy assets. I pay my taxes on the net, or what is left over, after I buy my assets. I buy assets first and pay taxes last. Your dad pays taxes first and has very little money left over to buy assets with." At the age of 10 or 11, I really did not understand exactly what Rich Dad was saying. I just knew it did not sound fair, and I said so. "That is not fair," I protested. "I agree," said Rich Dad, nodding. "It isn't fair, but that is the law." The laws are the same. When discussing this issue in my seminars, I often hear, "That may be a law in the United States, but that is not the law in my country." Since I teach in many English-speaking countries, I often reply with, "How do you know? What makes you think the laws are different?" The fact is that most people do not know which laws are similar and which laws are different, so I offer a short lesson in economic history and laws. I point out to my classes that most English-speaking countries' laws are based upon English common law, the law spread throughout the world by the British East India Company. I also point out to them the date the rich began to make their rules. In 1215, the Magna Carta, the most famous document of British constitutional history, was signed. By signing the Magna Carta, King John yielded part of his power to the rich barons of England. It is now generally recognized that the Magna Carta showed the viability of opposition to the excessive use of royal power. I then explain the importance of the Magna Carta as my rich dad explained it to me. Ever since the signing of the Magna Carta, the rich have been making the rules. The spiritual golden rule is, "Do unto others as you would have them do unto you." The financial golden rule is, "He who has the gold makes the rules." However, I think the real financial golden rule is, "He who makes the rules gets the gold." Your business buys your assets. When I was 25 and almost out of the Marine Corps, Rich Dad reminded me of the difference in two life paths. Always remember that the rules are different for the different quadrants. Therefore, make your next career decision carefully. While that job with the airlines might be fun in the short term, in the long run, you might not get to be as rich as you want to be, he said. How the tax laws changed. Although Rich Dad did not finish school, he was an avid student of economics, world history, and the law. When I was attending the U.S. Merchant Marine Academy at Kings Point, New York, studying world trade, Rich Dad was very excited that my studies included admiralty law, business law, economics, and corporate law. Because I had studied these subjects, it was much easier for me to decide to not take a job as an airline pilot. The reason is found in history. One of the differences between America and the rest of the world colonized by the English is that the colonists in America protested excessive taxes by organizing the Boston Tea Party. America grew rapidly from the 1800s to the 1900s simply because we were a low-tax country. Being a low-tax haven, the United States attracted entrepreneurs from all over the world who wanted to get rich quickly. In 1913, however, we passed the 16th Amendment to the U.S. Constitution, which made taxation of the rich possible, and that was the end of the low-tax state. Yet the rich have always found a way out of the trap, which is why the laws are different for the different quadrants, especially favoring the B quadrant, the quadrant of the ultra-rich of America. The rich have gotten even for the tax law change of 1913 by slowly changing the laws and putting pressure back on the other quadrants. In 1943, the current Tax Payment Act was passed. Now, instead of just taxing the rich, the federal government was allowed to tax everyone in the E quadrant. If you were an employee in the E quadrant, you could no longer pay yourself first because the government got paid first. People are always shocked to see how much is taken out in both direct taxes and in hidden taxes from their paycheck. In 1986, the Tax Reform Act was passed. This law change dramatically affected anyone who was a professional worker, people such as doctors, lawyers, accountants, architects, engineers, and so on. This law change prevented someone in the S quadrant from using the same tax laws used by the B quadrant. For example, if a person in the S quadrant has the same income as someone in the B quadrant, the S quadrant worker will have to pay a beginning tax rate of 35%, 50% when you include social insurance taxes. On the other hand, the B quadrant person could possibly pay 0% on the same amount of income. In other words, the golden rule, he who makes the rules keeps the gold, was once again true. The rules are made from the B quadrant and have been made from there ever since 1215, when the barons forced the king to sign the Magna Carta. Some of these laws and changes are explained in greater detail in Rich Dad, Poor Dad, and in Cash Flow Quadrant. The decision is made. Even after I decided to follow Rich Dad's investment plan instead of my Poor Dad's plan, Rich Dad shared with me a simple analysis about my chances for success in life that reinforced my decision. Drawing the Cash Flow Quadrant, he said, your first decision is to figure out in which quadrant you have the most chance of achieving long-term financial success. Pointing to the E quadrant, he said, you don't have the expertise that employers will pay the big money for, so you'll probably never make enough money as an employee to invest with. Besides, you're sloppy, you get bored easily, you don't have a very long attention span, you tend to argue, and you don't follow instructions well. Therefore, your chances for financial success in the E quadrant don't look very good. Pointing to the S quadrant, he said, S stands for smart. That is why so many doctors, lawyers, accountants, and engineers are in the S quadrant. You're bright, but you're not that smart. You were never much of a student. The S also stands for star. You'll probably never be a rock star, movie star, or sports star, so your chances of making the big money in the S quadrant are slim. That leaves the B quadrant, Rich Dad continued. This quadrant is perfect for you. Since you lack any special talent or expertise, your chances for attaining great wealth will be in this quadrant. And with that comment, I was certain. I decided that my best chance for great wealth and financial success would be through building a business. The tax laws were in my favor, and my lack of stardom in the other quadrants just made my decision easier.